Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 3, Verse 47, from the chapter entitled The Birth of Lord Krishna. Tatastra Shade Bhagavat Prachodita. Sutam Samadaya Sasutika Grihat. Yada Bahir Gantam Yeshataya Dya. Yoga Maya Jani Nanda Jayaya Tatastra Sadir Bhagavat Prachodita Sutam Samadaya Sasutika Grihat Yada Bahir Gantam Yeshataya Jaya Yoga Maya Jini Nanda Jayaya Tatastra Sadir Bhagavat Prachodita Sutam Samadaya Sasuti Gagrihat Yada Bahir Gantam Yesho Tayada Yoga Maya Jini Nanda Jayaya. Ta-ta. Thereafter. Cha. Indeed. Shari. Vasudev. Bhagavapachodita. Being instructed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sutam. His son. Samadaya. Carrying very carefully. Sa. He. Sutika Grihat. From the maternity room. Yada. When. Bahigatam. To go outside. Iesha. Desired. Tati. Exactly at that time. Aja. The transcendental energy. Who also never takes birth. Ya. Who. Yogamaya. Is known as Yogamaya. Ajani. Took birth. Nandajayaya. From the wife of Nanda Maharaj. Translation. Thereafter, exactly when Vasudev, being inspired by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was about to take the newborn child from the delivery room, Yogamaya, the Lord's spiritual energy, took birth as the daughter of the wife of Nanda Maharaj. Purport by His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur discusses that Krishna appeared simultaneously as the son of Devaki and as the son of Yashoda, along with the spiritual energy, Yogamaya. That means she had twins. As the son of Devaki, he first appeared as Vishnu. And because Vasudeva was not in the position of pure affection for Krishna, Vasudeva worshipped his son as Lord Vishnu. Yashoda, however, pleased her son Krishna without understanding his godhood. This is the difference between Krishna as the son of Yashoda and the son of Devaki. This is explained by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on the authority of Harivamsa. Translation again, please repeat. Thereafter. Exactly when Vasudev, being inspired by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was about to take the newborn child from the delivery room, Yogamaya, the Lord's spiritual energy, took birth as a daughter of the wife of Maharaj Nanda. Om Agyanate Ramandasya Dhyajana Shalakaya Chakshuran Malitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. The comparison between the Lord's appearance to Devaki in Mathura and his simultaneous appearance in Goloka is described here by Srila Prabhupada, citing Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's authority. The appearance of Lord Krishna is the answer to all speculative iconography regarding the Absolute Truth. And with his appearance, the sight of Vasudev dispels all doubts and difficulties which plague the atheists, agnostics, and skeptics. And his appearance destroys all the idols of pantheistic thought and nihilistic pseudo-monism. How are all these idols shattered and misconceptions dispelled? By the supreme glory displayed before Vasudeva and Devaki? Or, in the contrast, not contrast, comparison, revealed in this verse, by the overwhelming love, beauty, sweetness, and charm embodied in the most loving and lovable human-like figure who appears in Gokul tonight at 12 o'clock. In his most natural, more than supernatural, more human than superhuman. And Lord Krishna, who expands into unlimited avatars and expansions, who are endless and countless like the waves of the ocean, forever delivering his grace and mercy upon the shores of this world. Amongst his infinity of forms, Sri Krishna in Vrindavan is the highest and fullest manifestation of divinity. We use the word appearance because he's not born, he's unborn. And yet we're celebrating his birth, more likely appearance, because Krishna's like the sun. He's always present. In the prayers of Vasudev to his newborn child, he elaborately explains how Krishna's nature as all-pervading. He's everywhere. Everything exists within Krishna, and Krishna exists within everything. As the supersoul of every atom, proton, neutron, and in between in each and every atom, Krishna is all-pervading. Like the sun. And yet, we experience from our limited perspective sunrise and sunset. Sunset here means rising again somewhere else, which is the nature of Krishna's lila. It's like the sun traversing all of creation. And as soon as one pastime concludes in one universe, it begins in the next. He's all-pervading. Why then are we celebrating his appearance? It is the occasion when he awakens that pure affection in which he reveals himself by what we call darshan to his pure devotees who are sharing the experience with us. His appearance is not born of physical nature or mental speculation. He descends from beyond the world of four dimensions, beyond the unlimited Vaikunthas. And the Vedic version supports the biblical dictum that man is made in the image of God. And with his appearance, all substitutes are eclipsed when he reveals the true object of love, service, and worship by his divine grace, who appears tomorrow. Manifesting clearly, the appearance of Krishna reveals to the unclouded cognition of a soul in the state of grace. We say unclouded because the analogy of the sun. After the sun sets and before the sun rises, we can't see the sun. Even in the daytime, the sun is sometimes covered by the clouds and mists of our mental speculation. And thus he appears as he is. And his appearance is described by analogies of this world, which are inadequate and yet helpful in becoming Krishna conscious, contemplating how his beauty is reflected in correspondence of the cooling, soothing, soft blue hue of a gem which has a subtle inner golden aura known as Indra Nilamani or sapphire. Or sometimes likened to the welcome impression of the first appearance of rain-bearing clouds at the close of a long, prolonged, and difficult, dry drought. In his eyes, which convey the supremely jubilant brilliance from the realm of perfect consciousness, are reflected in the image and the symbology of the lotus, representing beauty and purity arising from the muck below and blossoming on the surface above. And his head is decorated, adorned with a crown distinct from any experience of this world, the closest approximation being the tail feathers of a peacock. He wears a garland comprising the collection of the delicate assemblage of the heartfelt affections of his various devotees represented in flowers, which we offer symbolically to his lotus feet to express our devotion. And his waist is encompassed by this yellow cloth, pitambara, composed of the cognitive radiance of the soul, which so embellishes his dark, cloud-like complexion like flashes of lightning skirting an approaching rain cloud. And you know from Srila Prabhupada's illuminations of the Bhagavat, something he had envisioned long before he came to America, utilizing the experience of nature, which is the reflection of the most pure and direct revelation of the spiritual nature in Goloka Vrindavan, reflected through the natural phenomena of this whole planet. Srila Prabhupada wanted a book with artistic displays to reveal the nature of Krishna and the spiritual world as indicated through the natural beauty and wonder of planet Earth. And that enchanting figure of Godhead holds, as we see, his dearly beloved flute, which expresses in sound form the affection of his heart. And that flute embodies the spiritual agency whose ravishing call awakens love in the hearts of those who are so fortunate as to hear that song, which attracts the individual souls to the Supreme Soul. And that flute is the inspiration for the finest musical arts and instruments of this world, which are reflections of Vrindadevi's storehouse, which includes all instruments needed to accompany the Brijabasis in their songs of devotion. And as he plays that flute, he stands in threefold bending form in the shade of the Kadamba tree, representing spiritual horripilation, ecstasy. And that image is set in the flowering meadows sloping to the shore of Jamuna, the flow of the essence of spiritual love. Such are the accounts of the appearance of Godhead as revealed to souls in the exclusive state of samadhi, exclusive meaning having no other interest other than the pleasure of Krishna. This is the definition of bhakti. You have no other interest than Krishna's pleasure. And in that state, Krishna makes his appearance in our hearts, which are a replica of Vrindavan when we are absorbed in such pure love. To contemplate the appearance of Krishna, we have to journey in our minds back and forth, as this verse is taking us from Mathura to Gokula. So in Mathura, at this time, at the end of Dwapara Yuga, King Ugrasena was ruling with his wife Padmavati. And when she went to visit her father in Vidarbha, and she was roaming in her father's garden, a yaksha flying overhead was so attracted by her beauty, being smitten by lust, he assumed a form exactly like King Ugrasena, and he appeared in that garden before Padmavati. And you know what happens. And these yakshas, like rakshasas, are so accomplished in mystical arts used for deception that she didn't realize that this was not her husband until it was too late. She was already impregnated with the seed of that yaksha, and she cursed him. That he would be killed by his own family members. This is Kamsa. So, the son of Sudarsen, the king, the rightful king, that's why in this verse Shukadeva Goswami is using the name Shauri, the son of Sudarsen. Whose son Vasudev found in Devaki a perfect match. And because Devaki was adopted like a daughter by King Ugrasena, that's why her brother is Kamsa, who in the appearance of Krishna is driving the chariot carrying Devaki to her father-in-law's house, which in Vedic culture is an extremely emotional experience, because a girl who's been protected all her life by her affectionate father now has to leave home. And for support, a family member, in this case, brother, accompanies her. And as Kamsa was driving the chariot through the streets of Mathura, which were beautifully decorated with for a festive atmosphere, and everyone is chanting in great affection, Vasudev Devaki Ki Jai. And then the whole atmosphere and mood was disrupted by an oracle proclaiming, Kamsa, you fool. You're volunteering this service to your sister, not realizing that her eighth child will be the cause of your death. And then we see a graphic example of what Srila Prabhupada says, that you can't trust someone who cannot control their senses. One second, but Kamsa is being such a perfect gentleman. And that one verse proclaimed from some unembodied source, and he draws his sword to behead his sister. And then Vasudev, frantic, utilized all philosophical and diplomatic strategies, which were totally ineffective, leaving him with the first concern of saving his newlywed wife's life. So he offered that, I'll bring all my sons to you to do with as you choose. So the first son, Kirtiman, considered the anguish of heart. Vasudev has to take from Devaki's embrace. She can't even say anything, but her eyes are pleading. But Vasudev is a man of honor. His word is good as gold. He had to comply with his promise, so he delivered the son to Kamsa, who was so affected in a good way by Vasudev's honor that he said, I'm not afraid of your first son. The oracle said this to the eighth, so just take him home. Then begins the interesting intercession of Narada Muni, whose counsel can be very bewildering if you don't consider that he knows all the behind-the-scenes events that have to be integrated perfectly in synchronicity with Krishna's plan. So now that Kamsa is again acting like a gentleman by the association of Vasudev, Narada Muni gives his counsel. Because he's not just speeding things up, he's bringing everything into proper perspective. And bringing us into proper perspective, Narada Muni, being concerned for the plight of the earth, who had so long been overburdened by this unnecessary defense force of demons posing as kshatriyas. Kshatriyas are protectors. And that role was usurped by the demons headed by Kamsa, committing atrocities of such brutal, heinous attempts to permanently destroy religious principles, not only on earth, but from the earth, throughout the universe. And why did he choose Mathura? It's the seat of God since time immemorial. And what is the essence of demoniac thought? To usurp the throne of God. And you yourself become the enjoyer, proprietor, controller. And for that to happen on a grand scale, religious principles have to be destroyed, and therefore he had his agents out scouring the countryside, vigilant for any sign of the sacrificial fire which they would defile. These hordes of marauding rakshasas, who had all been conquered by Kamsa and therefore had to submit to him. So Narada Muni, concerned for the plight of Bhumi, which you can see in Kubja, who is Bhumi, as she was a hunchback. because of the overload of sinful atrocities she had to bear. So Narada Muni, sympathetic to the mood of Bhumi, and also understanding the behind-the-scenes events over the yugas that are all now just coming into play to facilitate Krishna's appearance in Leela, Narada Muni approached Kamsa and said, "You know, do you know what's happening?" In today's language, we would say, "Haven't you checked the internet lately? Aren't you aware of what's happening?" "Clearly not, so I will inform you that the demigods are taking birth in the Bhoja, Vishnu, and Andhaka dynasties, as well as merging with the souls of the Brijabasis. And so therefore, we are surrounded by souls who are infiltrated by devas. And demigods cannot be trusted." Siddhartha Muni is creating doubt and fear in Kamsa's heart, because he knew that the six sons of Devaki would be liberated in the process of facilitating Krishna's birth. So he was sympathetic both to the plight of Bhumi as well as the Sagabashuras who were cursed. The six sons of Devaki, we call Sagabashuras, the six archetypal demons, who we all know very well because we host them within our hearts. Their names are Kam, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, Vatsarya. Lust, anger, greed, pride, illusion, and envy. Archetypally, the sons of Marichi, the incarnation of the mind. And when those sons of Marichi saw Brahma chasing after his daughter with lusty intent, they derided him, which was an offense. Even though it was an abominable activity, he's such an exalted soul, being used and directed by Krishna to reveal important lessons to us, overlooking that aspect, they laughed in a deriding manner at Brahma, for which they were cursed by the sages to take birth as the sons of Kalanemi, who was the son of Hiranyakashipu, meaning a demon family. And they got in trouble when they approached Lord Brahma after they mocked him in the previous life. Next life, they approached Lord Brahma with similar intentions as Hiranyakashipu to become basically immortal. Hiranyakashipu learned of it and cursed them again, that in their next life they would be killed by their father. So that's why Narada Muni incited Kamsa to aggravate his atrocities, to kill the six sons of Devaki, one after another. Every year, they had to face that inconceivable trauma of delivering their newborn child to Devaki's brother to be brutally slaughtered before Vasudeva's eyes. So, after the son was slaughtered, then, now this is all related to our own practical daily sadhana. By sadhana, we're practicing bhakti, personified in Devaki. We're trying to free ourselves from material consciousness, personified by Kamsa. And by a proper fear of material consciousness, we take shelter of Krishna and the lust, anger, greed, pride, illusion, and envy in our hearts are dispelled. After which, back to Mathura, Krishna calls his little sister, Yogamaya, and addresses her as Bhadre, means auspicious, to encourage her because he had a very heavy task for her. And this applies to us. The guru, who means heavy, gives instructions which may be difficult, but with the instruction is included the blessing by which we can be successful by his divine grace. So Krishna tells Yogamaya to arrange for the transfer, because after the Sadgarbhasuras were delivered from Devaki, next step in the series of events is Sankarsan appears in her womb for the final cleansing of her heart after it had been infested by these anartas and they were liberated. For the final cleansing process and preparation for the appearance of Krishna, Sankarsan, expansion of Baladeva, enters Devaki's womb. This means Guru prepares our hearts for the appearance of Krishna by the final cleansing and arrangements to offer Krishna a proper sitting place within our hearts. That's the function of Guru, representative of Baladev, whose expansion is Sankarsan, the seventh child in the heart of Devaki. And when he had made the proper atmosphere for the appearance of Krishna, then Krishna tells Yogamaya, Bhadre, arrange for his transfer to the womb of Rohini. And then Krishna gives all the names by which Balaram would be known. And every detail is significant in so many different perspectives. One is that because this is the first Leela in which the Lord's brother becomes Dauji, elder, people might think that maybe he's the original supreme and Krishna, his younger brother, is an expansion. No, it's the other way around, is established in the fact that Krishna gave the names for Balaram. Names of a child are given by elders, seniors. So, and then he told Yogamaya that after you arrange for that transfer, then you appear in Devaki's womb. So Kamsa was already confused by the good counsel of Narada Muni, who convinced him that you don't know what child might be the eighth, because demigods cannot be trusted. You know, they're not straightforward like we Rakshasas who just count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. The demigods might count in reverse. They might count any which way. Any child could be the one to kill you. So Narada Muni is just confusing Kamsa all the more. And then he's becoming increasingly confused because the seventh child was a miscarriage. So does that count as a seventh child? After which, from the pure heart of Vasudev, where Krishna appeared in Mathura, the Lord was transferred to the pure heart of Devaki by the process of Diksha. This is what initiation means. Guru, from within his heart, transfers Krishna to the heart of the qualified disciple. At which point, Devaki was glowing with unprecedented effulgence, making Kamsa increasing that fear that his death was imminent. And he became Krishna conscious. He was seeing Krishna everywhere. Not favorably. It wasn't bhakti, but he was Krishna conscious. He was seeing Krishna in everyone and everything, but it wasn't favorable. It wasn't bhakti. Meanwhile, in Braj, you know, a little background from Mathura, where Devamita had two wives, one Kshatriya wife who gave birth to the son Sudasena, who gave birth to Vasudeva. He also had a Vaishya wife who gave birth to Parjanya Maharaj, who became the father of the five Nandas, beginning with Upananda. That's why you see he's senior, that's why you see his name prominent in all the councils they would hold in Braj. And yet, Upananda considered his younger brother, Nanda, to be the rightful heir of the throne. And they called a council to discuss the matter. And unlike most of the councils we experience in this world, everyone unanimously agreed that Nanda should be the king. And Upananda said, my name, Upananda, means follower of Nanda. So everyone agreed, Nanda should be the king of the cowherds, who married a gopi from a nearby village named Yashoda. Perfect match. And even these names are so beautiful. Nanda means joy. Yashoda means one who gives fame. Kirtida, who gives glory, as in Kirtan. Sumukha, who gives happiness. All these names denote givers, not takers. Because these souls are so filled with love for Krishna, all they want to do is give of themselves for the benefit of others and the pleasure of Krishna. So, in Braj, when Nanda married Yashoda, the citizens all felt that all their desires had been so perfectly fulfilled. Such a loving, caring couple who considered everyone in their kingdom, whether they be human, animal, plant, aquatic, they considered all the subjects of the kingdom with such affection like their own children. And in that atmosphere, everyone was perfectly happy at first, but then that happiness began to wane over the decades when as they approached old age, And both Nanda and Vrishabhanu had gray hair, and still neither of them had any child. And this was like an increasing darkness. Pervading the landscape. And the Brijabasis, in their simplicity, they suggested to Nanda Maharaj various vratas and worships and yajnas and pilgrimages. They would bless them with child. But Nanda, the most simple of all, he had faith only in his deity, his Shalagram. But then one day, Rohini arrives on horseback from Mathura, where she was, you know, vacating her husband's shelter, her husband's Vasudev, who sent her to his dear most friend Nanda for shelter and protection. So Rohini arrives, already pregnant, with Balaram in her womb, and then this wonderful appearance of an elderly sadhvi, which means female sadhu, who had long white hair and saffron sari and had two children, her grandchildren with her. She was clearly saintly, and all the Brijabasis bowed down and asked, "Who are you, where are you from, and what do you desire?" And she introduced herself on Purnamasi, the mother of Sandipani Muni. Whose ashram is the Gurukul in Avantipur, modern-day Ujjain. She said, "I'm Sandipani Muni's mother, and these two children are my grandchildren. Madhu Mangal and Nandimukhi." And then she gave like her qualification. She said, "I am famous as an expert Jyotish," which means astrologer, "who reads the light of the stars and planets, by which," she said, "I have calculated that Nanda and Yashoda will soon have a son." And this was quite surprising news, being so advanced in their elderly years. And yet they had great faith in Purnamasi, who is another form of, she's the form of Yogamaya in Braj, who makes such wonderful arrangements that even Krishna cannot understand. So they were so delighted by the good news. Nanda and Yashoda will have a son, even late in old age. So they asked, "How can we serve you, Purnamasi?" She said, "You can offer me a little cottage, a bhajan kutir, on the bank of Jamuna, who is dark like your child will be. And I am so eager to see his appearance, for which all you have to do," she's instructing Nanda Maharaj, "is to follow Ekadasi Vrata for 1 year, during which time wonderful events began transpiring. Nanda Maharaj would return home from herding the cows, and he would do his evening sadhana, which was study of Ramayana. And while he's reading his book, he's seeing from the corner of his eyes the luster like a sapphire and the image of a child with curly black hair, lotus eyes, and a peacock feather as a crown, sitting in Yashoda's lap." He would only see from the corner of his eyes, and he turned to look, but there's nothing there. simultaneously, Mother Jashoda, through the corner of her eyes, as she was cooking in the kitchen, would see that same child sitting on the lap of Nanda Maharaj as he's reading Ramayana. When she would turn and look directly, there was nothing there. And they would both see that same child running through the house. When they tried to catch him, there was no one there. So then, in the winter, on the night of Purnim, in the month of Magh, which at which time it's cold. The month of Magh is cold, and full moon evenings are more cold because the moon is cooling. So, in his bed, under his quilt, Nanda Maharaj had this dream that that child he'd been seeing for some time now had appeared very vividly within his heart. And then he sat up. Simultaneously, Mother Jashoda sat up, speechless in ecstasy, because she had the same dream. At which time, these symptoms of pregnancy manifest in Mother Jashoda. So when it was calculated to be about the time of his birth, they prepared a maternity room in Nanda's palace, and the midwife, the nurse, was caring for Mother Jashoda with very attentively, but, you know, under the spell of Yoga Maya, at the most critical time, she felt so tired that she took a snap, which turned into a nap. And then she slept right through the midnight hour when Mother Jashoda was becoming very restless in the maternity room and at midnight delivered twins, Krishna and Yogamaya. Simultaneously to the birth of Vasudeva Krishna to Devaki, and then in the morning when the peacocks began to caw, and the nurse woke up and she ran to Mother Jashoda's maternity room and saw the same child that Nanda and Jashoda had seen in their visions. This child with fully developed curly hair in which his little finger was stuck. And in great delight, the nurse, because Mother Jashoda was, what's a nice way to say, out of it? She'd had a very difficult night. She couldn't remember who was born. Didn't know that she gave birth to twins and all the other events of the night. She was just so tired. And when her nurse came and put the baby in her arms, he was so soft, like butter. And then the nurse ran to the barn because Nanda is milking time. Nanda and his brothers are milking the cows. And the nurse was so ecstatic she couldn't speak, but they could clearly see the child must be born. So Nanda began running this direction, that, because he was thinking, I have to arrange a festival, I have to decorate the cows, I have to give charity to the Brahmins. He's just running in every direction. His brothers told him, we'll take care of all of that. You just go see your baby. So when he went to see his child, and he was swimming in the ocean of bliss, arriving at the maternity room, Rohini was already there, holding her sari like a curtain and asking bakshish. He gave her his golden necklace. She removed her veil, and Nanda saw the same child appearing in his visions and dreams for the previous year. Little finger still stuck in the curls of his hair. And then the Brijabasis heard, and they were running in all directions, singing and dancing, that Nanda Maharaja's house has given birth to supreme bliss. Oh, brothers, Nanda is distributing, of course, this is from an Aishwarya perspective, elephants and horses to the young and palanquins to the elderly. He's opened his treasury and is just lavishly bestowing true wealth upon all the Brijabasis who felt so unqualified. And in ecstasy, they're all showering each other with yogurt and condensed milk and butter. We used to do that here on Janmashtami. Back in Mathura, when the eighth child was born, and Kamsa was lamenting that his fate was fructifying, the Lord appeared in Devaki's cell as Vishnu, fully bedecked, chakra, padma, club, disc, lotus. What's the other one? Sudarshan chakra. Why did he appear? His full-fledged Vishnu form, because he was gonna remind Vasudeva and Devaki of their previous births and a tremendous tapasya they performed to have a child like Krishna. And then birth after birth, he became their child. But he finally concluded that if you want a child like Krishna, then there is no child like Krishna. So I'll become your child. So just to assure them that this is the God that they wanted as a child, he appears as Vishnu with a dazzling crown on his head. And he reminds them, you wanted me as your son, so here I am. And then Devaki, in her prayer, she's saying, my dear Lord, please conceal yourself because Kamsa will kill you. She doesn't have the same pure love as Jashoda, because Mathura is a mixture. She's seeing that her son is Vishnu, but she's still fearful that Kamsa will kill you. So then he said, okay. After giving his instructions to Vasudeva to take me to Gokul, he turned himself into that little baby. And Vasudeva, from within the prison, which had 16 iron doors with armed guards who had lions for support in case anybody would try to escape. So Vasudeva, clad in iron shackles like an animal, With the birth of Yogamaya, the magic began, especially in Braj, but reflecting Mathura, the chains dropped off, all the 16 iron gates swung open, the guards and lions were sound asleep, and what does the 16 represent? That you have to cross over on the path to Braj? 5 working senses, the 5 knowledge acquiring senses, the mind, and the 5 material elements. So there was a clear passage offered to Vasudeva. And he emerged from the palace in the midst of a storm. Why did it storm that night? Because this all had to be conducted in topmost secrecy because of Kamsa's determination to kill the child. He had spies everywhere. killing the newborn male children, kidnapping all the females, including Radha and Chandravali, kidnapped by Putana on the order of Kamsa. So Yoga Maya arranged it to be a storm because nobody would be out. And she also put everybody to sleep for the security. And as Vasudeva emerged into the storm, he didn't feel the effects of the storm because Anantashesh from behind him, casting his hoods over Nanda like an umbrella, simultaneously to serve Krishna by protecting him from the storm and fulfill Anantashesh's deep desire to follow in the footsteps of a devotee, in this case, Vasudeva. And the Acharyas give so many reasons for the storm. The cloud, thinking that Krishna is going to appear with my complexion, was so overwhelmed with ecstasy that he was just shedding tears. And he was also thinking that, you know, he was born in a prison, a dungeon, and he hasn't had a bath. So by the rainfall, he's offering the first Abhishek. Simultaneous to the yearning of the ocean, who's the father of Lakshmi, thinking my son-in-law is born, how can I offer Abhishek being far away? He sent his offering by way of the clouds, showering down as the gentle underneath the hoods of Anantashesh, fearsome outside. Jamuna was flooded, and she parted to allow Vasudeva to cross over, but not without midstream rising up to embrace the child in her own waves. So then he took. So Mahamaya is putting everybody to sleep in Mathura so they don't realize what's going on. Yogamaya's function is to conceal or reveal according to Krishna's plan. He reaches Gokul, everybody is asleep, the nurse is gone. He exchanges his child with... He didn't see that Yashoda had twins. He only saw the girl. So he took the girl and then he placed his child, not seeing she already had a son, but Vasudeva Krishna merged with Yashoda Nandana. And Vasudeva returned, put in the shackles. Kamsa heard the commotion that the child was born. But there was no child. He'd been transferred to Gokul. So then, shortly thereafter, after the festival for the appearance of Krishna, Nanda went to Mathura because he wanted to be sure he paid his taxes on time to Kamsa to help keep him passive. And there in Mathura, Nanda and Vasudeva developed such heartfelt affection. And that increased through their various encounters in decades to come. They were like brothers. And Vasudeva would oftentimes test Nanda to find out if he was aware of the mystery of the arrival of his son. He was hoping he wasn't aware because that would just make Nanda more uneasy about Kamsa's atrocities. They met again at Kurukshetra for the solar eclipse, in which their heartfelt affection just becoming more condensed. So Nanda had so much trouble, as did all his subjects, residing outside Braj. But in Kurukshetra, because Krishna was there, it wasn't really because Krishna was there, because the Brijabasis came there. It was Kurukshetra became just like Vrindavan. So every day, as Nanda and Vasudev were just deepening their friendship, Nanda would tell Vasudev that, you know, I have to leave today. But then he had to change it to, I have to leave tomorrow. And he extended it for 3 months because Nanda and Vasudev were so close. They couldn't bear ways until Yogamaya arranged. Then Nanda returned with Krishna and Balaram in his heart, while Vasudev returned to Dwarka with Krishna and Balaram in his caravan. Meanwhile, back in Dwarka, where Krishna and Balaram would come every day to offer their respects to Vasudev, and he was reflecting on the events of the past, especially on what happened to Kurukshetra. Vasudev was reflecting that the sages were glorifying Krishna. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when Krishna and Balaram came to offer their obeisances, Vasudev prayed to him, prayed to them for shelter. And Krishna and Balaram so lovingly assured him that whatever you say, whatever you think, we're still nonetheless your sons. And you and Devaki are our shelter. So while Vasudev is praying to Krishna, Devaki is silent as the tears are flowing from her eyes because she's just thinking. She still hadn't healed from the brutal slaughter of her sons just after birth. She was still, what you'd say in mundane terms, traumatized. So when Vasudev concluded his prayers, Devaki appealed to Krishna that I heard that when you were in Avantipur at Gurukul, you returned from the dead the son of your teacher as remuneration for his services, Sandipani Muni. O Krishna and Balaram, could you bring back my sons in the same way? They looked at each other and smiled, and then they traveled to the court of Bali Maharaj in Sutala. And that's where Krishna revealed the past secrets. You know, the sons of Devaki, they were, you know, the Sadgarbhasuras, and through this series of events, they were apparently killed by Kamsa. Now they're here with you. Devaki wants them back, so we're here to take them. So Krishna and Balaram returned from Sutala to Dwarka, where Devaki was waiting in great earnest, and Krishna and Balaram appear with Devaki's six babies, lost many decades earlier, getting on to nearly a century now, since she lost her babies, and now she has them back. And the milk just began to flow. Those babies drank her breast milk, at which was Mahaprasad nectar, because, you know, Devaki, just before she let Krishna go to Gokul, she fed him one time, not wanting him to be hungry on the way. So her breast milk was Mahaprasad nectar. Then when those babies drank that nectar, they became self-realized, mature demigods, offered obeisances to Krishna and Balaram, and returned to the celestial realm. Leaving Devaki distraught with wonder, unable to adjust the events in her mind by any way but to consider that for Krishna and Balaram, any wonderful possibility is quite natural. And that was affirmed when Krishna finally returned to Vrindavan, and the Brijabasis in song are presenting questions and answers. Question is, how can you Brijabasis say that Krishna's relatives are Nanda and Yashoda after you yourselves have admitted to Vasudeva and Devaki that you are their sons eternally? And the response from the chorus is that it's not we who are saying it, it's Krishna himself, who, after he killed Kamsa, told Nanda and Yashoda, it is you who affectionately raised and cared for us with greater love than anyone has for their own life. They are the real mother and father who care as for their own children who are abandoned by parents who are unable to care for them. And in Kurukshetra, even Vasudeva admitted that Nanda and Yashoda are Krishna's real parents. But as the questions and answers went back and forth, by one act alone, all objections were answered and questions were settled forever. When Krishna's chariot, he's about, 100 years old now, stops as he's returning from Dwarka to Braj, stops right in front of Mother Yashoda and climbs in her lap. And the Brijabasis realize that you can't worship Krishna alone because he was so bound to Mother Yashoda, even when he's approaching 100 years of age, that the welcome, the artik, everything had to be offered to Yashoda, Krishna, who were inseparable. So after Krishna returned to Vrindavan, he was confronted with a very serious dilemma. That in his child, he had promised to marry all the gopis. And even when he was 2.5 years old, you know, the day that Balaram was teasing him, Gopal, there's a mystery you don't know. But just consider, Nanda and Yashoda are fair complexion. I'm fair complexion. You alone in this family are dark. You know why that is? I never thought about it. He said, because you don't belong to Mother Yashoda. And then Krishna burst into tears and he ran to Yashoda. And the emotion so choked up in his throat he couldn't speak. When she understood, and he just pointed to Balaram. Oh, she said, Balaram lied. You are mine. And as soon as he heard you are mine, he was completely pacified. But then he told her that, you know, I need support in this world. And Balaram, he does these things. So I need somebody to support me. Why don't you get me married? This is when he's 2.5 years old. And she said, well, Gopal, who do you want to marry? He said, well, it shouldn't be my decision. It should be decided by the elders. But I see that Nanda has equal affection for Vrishabhanu Maharaj as he does for Vasudev. And Vrishabhanu Maharaj has a daughter. You know, you could arrange for me to marry her, which is what Mother Yashoda cherished all along. So then, when Krishna came back from Dwarka to Vrindavan, and it was a grand festival, but Krishna was tormented by this challenge. He promised to marry the gopis,
But now they're already married. But they're still waiting for him. How to resolve this dilemma? And Krishna couldn't sleep. He was just tossing and turning, thinking, this is beyond me. Then he concluded, my only shelter is Brajadam. Brajashakti can accommodate any impossibility. So then he was peaceful, and then there was a... He had three visitors, Purnamasi, Vrindadevi, and Madhu Mangal. And Purnamasi told Krishna that this whole dilemma is my fault, because I'm the one who created that spell that all the Brijavasis thought that their daughters were married and their parental obligations were fulfilled. I created this illusion, I'm at fault, and I can also remove the veil of that illusion so that everyone can see that Krishna should marry the gopis. So she told Krishna, why don't you just kidnap Radha the way you did Rukmini? And Krishna said, that doesn't make any sense. Because if I was to kidnap her from Vrindavan, where would we go? We can't go anywhere, so that won't work. Besides that, Rukmini was unmarried. Radha is married, Purnamasi said, but that was a grand illusion. So whether it was illusion or reality, everybody has accepted it for decades. So how can you say that I can marry the gopis? So Vrindadevi and Purnamasi said, just gather all the subjects of your kingdoms at the base of the steps to King Vrishabhana's palace, and we'll have a town meeting to resolve this dilemma. So all the Brijabhasis assembled there in Varshana. And then Mother Jashoda's long-lost daughter, who she never even met, she appeared for the first time to Nanda and Jashoda. And for further conviction, she appeared as Yogamaya. As Purnamasi is sitting in meditation to evoke Yogamaya, she appears with her feet not quite touching the ground. And what is the first thing she does? She goes to Nanda and Jashoda and bows down at their feet. The daughter they never even knew they had come to resolve this dilemma about Krishna's marriage. So she casts her glance upon the crowd from left to right and told Nanda Maharaj that there are some important members of this assembly who are not present. And he looked, and they're all here. He said, no, they're not. So Yogamaya directed some of the ladies to go to the homes of the gopis and report back what they found. When they came back, they were looking very apprehensive. And they were so fearful they could hardly speak. And she tells them, what is it? They said that these gopis are at home performing their household functions for their families. She said, well, go invite them to come. We don't want to get any further implicated in this spell you're cast. She said, no, it's going to work out well. Just go. So with her assurance, the ladies went to the gopis' homes and returned with the gopis who were already present in the assembly. And the gopis who were just arriving saw themselves already arrived, and they looked at them, and they looked back at, you know, we've been here all this time, and that you're just arriving, and they're looking at each other, and everyone is looking and seeing for the first time that there's duplicate gopis. So Purnamasi is conducting this whole thing, but Yogamaya is giving support. She says, so now you can see that the gopis who are married to gopas other than Krishna, who who are performing their household duties, who have just arrived, are meeting for the first time. They're duplicates. The originals are here waiting to marry Krishna. But nobody could tell who's who, because they were almost exact duplicates. So Yogamaya said, well, just put them side by side. And when they stood that way, everyone could see there was a slight difference in luster and beauty between the originals and the duplicates. So it's a long series of events, but basically Krishna married all the gopis. And as he was leaving Varshana to return to Nandagram, King Vrishabhanu and Kirtita, with tears flowing in their eyes, they gave Krishna worthy instructions how to care for and protect and satisfy their daughter. And when they returned to Nandagram, it was like Mother Yashoda had expanded into 16,108 forms to prepare all the rooms for her new daughters-in-law. So do you think everybody was happy now that finally Krishna's returned to Vrindavan and he's married? Because he had to marry, because Nanda and Yashoda, they told him, we can't bear the thought that you would ever leave again. He said, I won't leave, I promise. He said, well, you have a reputation for not keeping your promises, so do something practical. What? Get married. Because they found that Uddhava's chariot parked at the city gates was more threatening than any demon who had appeared thus far. Because there was testimony that Krishna can leave at any time. So they were convinced that when he's married, he'll be bound to Vrindavan and he won't leave. So but then, do you think everybody lived happily ever after? Because the gopis had very difficult time transitioning from their parakeet above, which is condemned by morality of this world, because what's lowest in reflection is highest in reality, it's Krishna's supreme delight. But now that they had married, they had to act in a whole different way. They couldn't just be purely spontaneous in their exchange with Krishna for his pleasure. They had social obligations and cultural standards and everything to complain. It was so awkward. And it was all legal and condoned and approved, but they just felt awkward. So then again, Purnamasi rises to the occasion and tells Nanda Maharaj, they're just arranged that they have a month-long nuptial sacrifice in the forest of Gokulapati, where they're residing at this time. Because Nanda Maharaj couldn't return to Nandagram after he came back from Kurukshetra, because everything reminded him of Krishna and he was trying to forget. So he took up residence in Gokulapati, where this landlord, the zamindar of that region, Nanda Maharaj, was so devoted to Nanda, he said, I'll have my guards posted 24 hours a day. You'll be the first to hear when Krishna returns. So anyway, they're at Gokul in the forest, but it's still not quite right. So left out one important detail. Before they went to the forest, when they asked Nanda Maharaj, we beseech your blessings for a month-long nuptial festival in the forests of Gokul. And Nanda said, Krishna, don't ask me, just order me what to do. But Nanda told Krishna that, because Krishna asked him, have I pleased you now that I've returned and married. And Nanda Maharaj said, I have one more desire. And Krishna said, what is it? That you promise again to never leave. Krishna said, I promise again. Are you happy now? And Nanda said, yes and no. I'm happy that you've returned to Vrindavan and married and promised you'll never leave. And yet, if my longing to have you causes heartbreak for Vasudev, I'll suffer as much as him. So please, Krishna, because they'd seen the sequence of events by which Yoga Maya makes anything possible, so he asked Krishna, please stay here with me and Yashoda while simultaneously living with Vasudeva and Devaki in Dwarka. And Krishna said, no problem. And then he simply expanded from Nandanandana to Vasudev Krishna, and like the gopis and their duplicates, there was a clear distinction between the two when they're side by side. Krishna is more loving and lovable. Vasudev Krishna is more reverential. So then, as the two Krishnas stood side by side to assure Nanda that Nandanandana will stay with you, Vasudev Krishna will go back on the chariot to Dwarka to stay forever with Vasudeva and Devaki. And Nanda was thinking, this is as good as it gets, but it wasn't. That wasn't Krishna's only miracle for the day. He expanded into another form. And he told, that form told Dwarka, expand the chariot. Because you have to put all the cows and deer and peacocks and gopas and gopis and take them back to Vaikuntha. The expansions of the demigods who had merged with the Brijabasis, Krishna told Dwarka, we're going to take back to Vaikuntha. So as the chariot expanded, and all the expansions who had merged with the gopas and gopis returned, Vasudev Krishna went back to Dwarka. Yashodanandana stayed in Vrindavan. And they tried a month in the forest of Gokulapati, but something wasn't quite right. And one night, Vishakha heard Radha singing that song, which Lord Gauranga is calling out to Krishna during Ratha Yatra. That very same personality who stole my heart in youth is now again my master. And yet, paradoxically, my mind is not satisfied. I wish to take you back to the bank of the Reva beneath the Batasi tree, and all my desires will be fulfilled there. So Vishakha was perplexed. I heard you singing that at Kurukshetra to lure Krishna back to Braj, but he's here. Why are you still singing that same lament? And then there was a rustle in the bushes, and emerged Krishna, who had been eavesdropping. And he said, just change Reva to Jamuna and Vitasi to Kadamba, and the purpose of your lamentation will be fulfilled. So she sang it in that way, and then Krishna began to dance into this beautiful garden in Gokulapati. And he's leading the gopis through the garden. And then he enters into a cave. And they were reluctant to follow. We said, no, it's fine. So they entered the cave, but it wasn't like caves of this world. It was this extravagant cavern complex, a subterranean paradise illumined by jewels and mirrors and waterfalls and gardens and jeweled bridges and everything being attended by Vrinda's Vandevis. And everyone is singing with celestial instruments, and it's such a heavenly atmosphere. And Krishna asked Radha, you know, I've created this for your pleasure. And she said, "You've certainly outdone yourself." But Lalita had a little different mood. She said, "Krishna," and Krishna was so proud that he pleased Radha, but Lalita is saying, "This place is dreadful. Get us out of here." And Krishna was perplexed. That didn't work. So he revealed, well, the cavern has branches that go everywhere. This one goes to Govardhan, this one goes to Rava, this one goes to Nandagram, and this one goes to Vrindavan. Then we'll take that one. So they emerged from the cavern and resumed Rasa Lila as if that Nitya Lila had never been disrupted by Krishna's descent to this world. He descended and reclaimed so many fallen souls through his agency of Gaura-Nitai and Srila Prabhupada, returned them to Goloka Vrindavan to emerge into that endless dance as if it had never been disrupted by Krishna's descent into this world, which is worshipped as the most memorable day in all of creation. Anyway, in summary, because you're getting tired, the difference compared in this verse between Devaki's love for Krishna tinged with reverence, which causes a distance, it obstructs that pure spontaneous flow of affection. The contrast is being revealed in this verse. And the nature of pure love revealed affirms repeatedly however many times Krishna reveals and displays and confirms he's God. Nevertheless, the Brijabasi's love eclipses all such understanding with the firm conviction that he is their child. A truth so profound that Krishna himself can't conceive it or fathom the depths of this particular blend of love. And therefore Krishna comes back after his Braj Lila. In the Kali Yuga, he comes as a devotee to experience for himself, through the perspective of his servants, the supreme glory of bhakti. Shri Krishna Dharmastami ki jai, Shri Shri Radha Vrindavan Chandra ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Nitai Gaura Premanandi Hari Hari Bol. Are there questions? I know somebody has a question. Oh, Nitya has a program, remember? Yeah, Nitya. Nitya does. You can lower your mask so we can hear you. Diksha.
During Diksha, yeah. Is that Krishna in the form of the sea?
In the form of what?
The sea.
Yes. I mean, I assume that your question is, how can you have somebody place Krishna in his heart when he's in your heart eternally? He's in your heart.
Your heart is dirty, right? I know Paramatma.
Right.
Not Krishna.
Yeah. Gurudev plants the seed of Bhakti Latat Bija in your heart, which blossoms in the appearance of your Ishtadev in time. Paramatma is forever in the heart of every living being. At Diksha, Gurudev plants the seed to eventually realize your Ishtadev within your heart. Ishtadev means favorite deity, who for Gaudiyas is not Paramatma. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.